Welcome to the Church Safety and Security Broadcast with the Church Safety Guys. Brought to you by TwoWayRadioCenter.com, a Motorola value-added reseller. The Church Safety Guys is a nonprofit organization dedicated to equipping the vigilant, those men and women who stand watch, keeping our houses of worship and places of faith safe. We believe church safety and security must be a ministry first, and have engaged servant leaders who continually strive for excellence and teams of motivated volunteers that are always training. Join us for the next hour as the Church Safety Guys unpack safety, security, leadership, and ministry operations with your hosts, Dr. James McGarvey and Mike Scully. This broadcast is also available on YouTube, your favorite podcast platforms, ChurchSafetyGuys.com, and on the original Church Security app. Download it today. Feel free to like, subscribe, and share with your ministry.
Well, hello. Welcome to the Church Safety and Security Broadcast with the Church Safety Guys. I am James, and once again, joined on this broadcast by my co-host, Mike.
What's up, sir? How you doing?
It feels like we were just here doing
deja vu, doing Groundhog this. Day. I mean, it is almost February 2nd, so
it is Groundhog very Day. Much Groundhog Day. Very yeah, much Groundhog go. Day. So, if you have just joined us, or you haven't joined us in a while, welcome back. Thanks so much for hanging out with us. We actually were pre-recording this episode because we have some stuff going on with our families and churches. So we wanted to talk about training on this episode. And we also wanted to talk a little bit about the conference, the Church Security Essentials Conference that's coming up. And that is in April. And you can actually get more information on that conference at the website, churchsafetyconference.com. And we've got some fantastic speakers. We've got some great content. Friday, Saturday, and then half of Sunday, we've actually added a firearm component, thanks to one of our sponsors on Sunday. So you can actually come into town, spend as much, and everything is kind of modular. That's how we set this conference up. So you can kind of pick and choose what's best for your church. And there's a lot of content there, and certainly that was kind of our intent with designing and setting up the conference, was to try and be able to offer something for pretty much every church.
Right. Yeah. It kind of builds out really well in different needs at different stages of maturity and growth and where you might be, but also some may not have the schedules to be able to take all of it. So Saturday, of course, is the core, and that's what your main focus should be. And then we have some extras on Friday. You could choose one, two, all three. And then James mentioned the extra training on Sunday.
For sure. Saturday is great. That's what we've done before. We've got a full day with speakers covering ministry-based topics and practical topics for training to help you and your team. Friday was kind of an add-on, and we did that because we've had so many folks ask for more time, more training. So Friday morning, we're going to go through and cover, you'll see there's some breakout sessions. We're going to cover starting a team, crisis mitigation, dealing with setting up a team, pastoral protection, a little bit of that. And then in the afternoon, Mike's taking over the the period of time. He's got something pretty cool and unique planned. Yep. And
piloting a kind of a part game show, part simulation, part tabletop, part kind of team building, if you will. But it's going to really be some kind of thinking under pressure, working through situations and understand what exactly is the optimal response and in that situation, and deal with variables and so forth. So really a great time to kind of really stretch the mind and make you think in a different situation and with potentially folks that are not on your team day to day. So the idea is to be able to say, hey, you're in a situation, you're in a church, and this is what's happening. How are you going to deal with it? And then your table will kind of talk about what that answer should be, and all with a chance to win a prize.
It's good stuff. And then Friday evening, we have a meet and greet where you will have the opportunity, very limited. In fact, we've had quite a few tickets sell out already for that. So we still have some space. But you definitely, if that's something you're interested in, you definitely want to come. And every ticket, I believe we're offering a book promotion as well. So when you purchase a ticket, you get a signed copy of one of our leadership books. And
to clarify, then, for the Friday night up, Friday right, night
for Friday night. Yeah. And then we also have, we'll have a couple of little sessions, but you'll have the time to meet some of the speakers and chat with them, and as well as some of the vendors that we have there. So it'll definitely be a fun time.
It's going to be a long weekend. Who are you kidding?
It will be a long weekend, but it will be a fun long weekend.
It's going to be a fun long weekend.
It's always fun. Kidding. It's always a lot of work, and I stress out and.
No, not at all.
And I'm the one that's always like, oh my gosh, this isn't working right. But I will say that I've learned to adapt, improvise, and overcome, right? So
have faith in the storm when you're on the deck of the boat.
Oh, I have a lot of faith, and I do a lot of praying. I do a lot of praying for all of that.
Yep.
I'm like, okay, from the speaker's safety and traveling and airplanes and time, and
it's a lot,
everything, but I mean, it is to me, it's a lot of work, like I said, but it's also a lot of fun. And I enjoy the fellowship of getting to know some of the other speakers better and getting to hang out a little bit more with folks that we typically only talk to on the broadcast, or, you know, we don't always get that chance to do that. So it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. It's great to meet folks in different areas. Of course, some of these folks are in my backyard. Chances are a good chance I've met a bunch of them already, but come say hello. We'd love to know where you're coming in from as well, whether it's down the road. I mean, it's super drivable location this year. I mean, we know a lot of church conferences tend to locate in the Dallas area, and it's great. Mm-hmm. Dallas is a great city. There's a lot to do and everything else, and it's obviously accessible. But Texas is so large that that's even a 4-hour drive for most in Houston, or a 5-hour drive for San Antonio. So we really wanted to try to get closer to the center and make it more drivable for everybody that's in the kind of the triangle or the core part of Texas there. But really, it's within a day's drive of a couple other spots there too, whether you're over in Louisiana, Arkansas, even up towards Missouri, et cetera. There's certainly options, or Oklahoma to drive down. But we're also, the conference is only about 20 minutes from a major airport as well. So we know every year there are some folks that fly in. This is a good location. Multiple airlines, a lot of opportunity to hop in over to Austin.
For sure. And actually this week I'm going to work on setting up. We've had a few churches reach out to us about recommending hotels and hotel stays and stuff like that. So we're going to be working on that this week and try and get that posted on the website as well. So there's definitely a lot of options. Grace Covenant Church in Austin is where it's going to be, and fantastic venue. They have done an amazing job helping us out and working with the church safety guys just to facilitate this. So we certainly couldn't do it without them. and are really blessed to have the opportunity to work with them this year. So Absolutely. Looking forward to it. It'll be a lot of fun. So let's jump into to our guests. So one of our guests that is actually going to be at the conference this year is we've managed to get her away from her crazy busy schedule and have her come on the broadcast. But I will pull her in here. And Maddie, thanks so much for hanging out with us and putting up with our crazy nonsense.
Twice. Yeah. Putting up with us twice.
No, thank you so much for having me back. I was excited.
So we actually met, you've been on the broadcast before, but we met, you said 2 years ago. It seems like it's been less time than that, but
I know,
time flies when you're having fun. Or something like that.
We're getting old, I guess.
Yeah, that's one.
You're getting old, Mike. I'm not old.
Who's kidding?
Not yet. Yeah, okay. So anyhow, we'll skip that. But you have an amazing background, and I'm impressed, and I love what you do. You do a fantastic job with the Red Letter Project. And so I'd like you to kind of go back for those that maybe aren't familiar with you or the ministry that you operate with your mom. But if you could just kind of go back through and mention to our folks listening your background and how you kind of got into the Red Letter Project and what motivates you with that. And then we'll jump in and talk about some training stuff.
Yeah, sure. I guess I'll just very quickly summarize a little bit of my background, but, came originally from Coast Guard law enforcement. I did that end of things for a little bit. Ended up after that moving overseas to England, actually, to finish my my master's degree in peace and conflict resolution. So I was doing a ton of research over there, just different conflicts in different areas of the world and whatnot. That was a lot of where my research kind of derived from. Was able to get published quite a few times through that work. So I was really excited. And then when I finished my master's degree over there, it was around the time of COVID, so I actually ended up coming back here a little bit earlier. The plan was actually to go back into law enforcement, and God very, very clearly steered me back into a totally different path. Like it was a kind of an amazing story, but long story short, I ended up opening the business, which is the Red Letter Project, and I've been doing that full-time ever since. So basically what we do in short is firearms and self-defense training. I travel all over the country doing it. I absolutely love my job. So I do everything from teaching self-defense type stuff to I even compete myself in things like USPSA pistol matches and whatnot. So it's a great life. And I love doing it with my mom. She's also a huge component to the Red Letter Project. I think the most special thing we do, of course, is we keep it very as Christ-centered as we possibly can. I think we've talked about this on the other podcast, but we do everything from regular private training, group training on like a daily basis to large scale women's only events. We also have some co-ed events going. And all of those events, we make sure that, you know, there's a Bible-centric focus, and it's fellowship and it's community. So.
And you've been able, it's kind of an interesting thing because you don't always give yourself the credit for it because you tend to be very humble, and that's okay.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
You've taken, what's funny is you've taken a very, very male dominated training activity. I'll say activity. That's a good word for it. And you've bridged the gap for women to embrace that and to become involved. But even beyond that, to the point of pouring into people's lives, mentoring, discipling. Mm-hmm. And I really love that about the Red Letter Project. And I love the fact that, you know, you've had the opportunity to not only train a new skill to people that would walk up and literally be like, I have no idea how to do any of this, like a clean slate, completely oblivious to any of that. You've been able to go and train them through to how to protect themselves, but then also develop a relationship with them. And that's, to me, that's different because there's hundreds of trainers out there that it's like, okay, when this is done, you know, you've paid the money, you've trained, okay, you have a skill, you know, it's perishable, but you've got the skill and that's it. That's the, mm-hmm. that's it. But I know you, and I know that if you or your mom passed anyone that had ever been in your class, you would probably like give them a hug, pray with them and just be like, how's it going? Like, it's just, it's discipleship. And I love that because that's what we try and do. Like when we're involved with a church and we try and help them with their safety or their, you know, lately we've been working on church culture with churches and trying to help them navigate, you know, how to be successful with operations and different things like that. That's just not something you see every day. And so it's really, to me, it's really encouraging that, you know, that you've gone down that path and that God has kind of led you and your mom to do that and be very successful with it.
I appreciate that. Thank you so much. It's actually kind of funny you bring that up. I was talking about this on Instagram the other day where it was like, well, what do Jesus and shooting have in common together? And I think there's a lot there. But the thing that I kind of first thought of is community, right? Because even though shooting guns and competing and like being good with a pistol doesn't directly per se have to do with Jesus himself, it does give you an avenue into building relationships and building community. Not even to dive in the fact that, you know, I think God has placed such a value on human life that he's okay with self-defense, right? So like, I think there's a bunch there, and it's just really interesting because the relationships I've been able to form through these events and like the training classes and whatnot, it's like, I've met some of my best friend, my personal best friends through classes. I've met some of the greatest business relationships I've had through classes. And honestly, I've also seen, you know, people become friends with each other, like when they take a class, and that's what we want. We don't just want people coming in, taking a class, learning how to shoot, and then never seeing them again. We want to keep in touch and see what's going on in their lives. Like, how can we pray for you? Like, how can we support you? And how do we get you back so that we can like continue to build that relationship with you?
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's great. Especially in a training environment, you really feel like the stress inoculation, the different layers of pieces when you're able to kind of hone a new skill or have an aha moment, mm-hmm. and you're doing it with others at the same time, there's an instant camaraderie, I think, in when you're put through the ringer in training. Certainly mm-hmm. different training creates that little higher level of pressure than others, mm-hmm. but there's that tremendous kind of memory of going back. It's like, I know even in our safety team, we're constantly looking back at, hey, remember that training? Like, 8 quarters ago, and we went out to that range over there, and remember how, like, we're still reminiscing over that training. And so I think it's tremendous though that you've brought it in to build that and disciple into others with a Christ-led component into your training environments.
Appreciate that, and the emotional component too, because like especially depending on the kind of training you're going through at the moment, like you said, it creates some sort of bond, because whoever you're going through that training with, it's going to create that core memory that they're going to look back on as well. And if you have somebody that can emotionally support you through that, like I think of at a lot of our events, we actually, like, I'll hire the role players to come in, like for a women's only event, for instance, I'll hire the role players to come in. We'll have like a room in like a shoe house or something, and we'll simulate, let's just say like a hotel room, and simulate a hotel room break-in or something like that. And some of those events that we stage are very real and they're very realistic. And so they can sometimes bring out memories or emotions and whatnot. And it would be very hard for people, I think, to like go through that and accomplish that without a giant group of women like waiting on the other side of the door to support them and hug them when they get out of that scenario. And it's like, it's one of those necessary evils where it's like, we would rather you learn and understand how to handle a situation here than the first time being in real life. But at the same time, we're not going to just drop you off the face of the earth and never talk to you again about it. You know what I mean? Like, the support has to be there as well.
It's amazing how training, even at the different levels, is you can go through the same type of training or scenario 100 times. Mm-hmm. And then for whatever reason, on the 101st or whatever it is, because of the different dynamic or some variable or some difference that day, mm-hmm. it hits you differently than it ever has before.
Right.
And I think that that can certainly provoke any sort of emotions, even from, I've seen it even from well-trained and long-term law enforcement officers that are like, okay, you wouldn't expect them to react so viscerally about a certain scenario, knowing fully well it's just training, it's not real. But you can see it. You can see the emotion come out, and you can see it. It harkens back to potentially old cases, or maybe it's something that you did in your church, and you had to handle a serious situation, or medical event, or something. And something about the scenario is just a trigger.
Yeah, 100%. And even for like the staff and the instructors watching it, I'm sure you guys know, like sometimes even watching something on the other end of it can trigger something or spark an emotion and whatnot. And like at Red Letter, we make sure, like, I honestly hire some of my best friends to be there, because it's like, we love them, we trust them. And I know that at the end of the day, if something like happens with one of us and somebody gets upset or sparks some sort of emotion, like, we have each other just as much as the students have us and each other as well.
That's great.
I think that what's interesting too about that is that, you know, you're reaching a generation with that opportunity that most people miss. And that's the engagement of motivating and connecting, like you mentioned earlier, connecting with someone. And, you know, we talk about that in the book that we put together, Train, just because Mike and I have both seen that, where, you know, connecting with people is, it's generational, but when you understand how someone responds to that emotionally, what drives someone, what motivates someone, it's not always a gold ticket to every problem, but at the same time, it gives us the opportunity to interact better and to develop a relationship and connect. And when you're an instructor and you're trying to teach something, that's what you want. Like a good instructor wants their student to walk away with that aha moment, saying, okay, you know what? Yes, this triggered me, but I'm working through it. And I think there's so much there that you guys do. It's not, when you do that training, it's not just, again, it's not just a perishable skill, but you're giving a worst case scenario to somebody in the best environment possible, where it, and again, that's where you guys are different. Like, you provide that emotional stability and support, and give people the opportunity to have that moment where it's like, you know what, I need to take a break, because this is a little bit much. Maybe this is something that I'm dealing with in my own personal life, but you have the resources there to say, look, this is how you deal with this in a, you know, in a godly and biblical way. It's not just black and white, or, you know, or static. It's like, you're legitimately connecting with people and making a difference to help them better themselves with their situation. And I know, like, you don't talk about it that often, but I know that some of the ladies that you guys have come to do the training have gone through amazingly terrible situations where you're trying to support them and show them a way to protect themselves and protect life and turn that page and get away from that and you know, and make a difference.
Yeah. And I, like, we deal with a lot of domestic violence survivors, which is a very touchy subject and just a touchy kind of topic in general. But the most, you know, the most interesting thing about it is these women don't want to be babied. They want somebody to be real with them, and they want to get past whatever they're dealing with. They don't want to live in it forever. So some of these like trainings that we do are, we hope and we pray that we're able to lovingly push somebody out of their comfort zone so that they can discover a new comfort zone, if that makes sense.
Absolutely.
So it's so important for us to do it. And you know, a lot of the scenarios we even run at Red Letter, like during these trainings, have either come from a personal experience or another staff member's experience, or live off of like a news report we saw or something. Like, we very closely replicate what we can find to make sure it's very accurate. And with that, sometimes, like, you know, like I said, there's the emotional side of it, but at the same time, there's so much growth after somebody's like, wow, I handled that and I handled it well. I know what I could have done better, but now at least I can go back and think through that in a logical way, as opposed to solely tying it to an emotion, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. I'm going to kind of reference, you kind of hit it really well, as in Proverbs 11:14 is, where there is no guidance, people fall, but in an abundance of counselors, there is victory. So you're equipping them, you're giving them that guidance, so that should they face that yet again, hopefully they would have victory rather than falling.
Yeah, absolutely. And if they ever do face it again too, they also know that they have a giant group of women there to support us, support them. We have a Red Letter alumni page for like the women that go through the program. And, you know, a lot of them, they'll stay in contact on that group page and we'll talk, and like, I'll get messages, and then I'll sometimes, like, if it's something that I know somebody else would be able to relate to them well on, I would direct them towards another woman that, that went to the retreat at some point. So, you know, we want to keep that support, not only on the weekend, but like after the weekend too, because I think that's where, it gets tough, is okay, everything's fun and everything's like interesting when you're there, but as soon as you get home and you're home alone, and you know, nights get long, it's like, who are you going to reach out to at that point? You know, so we want to provide, and we hope that people feel comfortable enough to reach back out to us, or to reach out to somebody else they met at the retreat, and you know, just kind of create that chain of support.
Yeah, you're establishing trust. You know, you're establishing trust and you're establishing friendship to some that, you know, it might be an unlikely source. Maybe, you know, maybe somebody prompted them to go, or maybe you encouraged them to come for that training, but you're providing hope to that individual, because like I said, and that's to me, that's what's amazing about you guys and so much so different, because we see companies and we see organizations all the time that mean well, that it's like, okay, we're going to train you in how to do this. And like I said before, that's it. Like, okay, you trained, you spent your day here, you know, go apply this for the next, you know, next couple of years and you'll be fine. And, you know, even just the fact that you guys have built in the alumni page to be able to say, hey, you know what? We're not just leaving you. It's here's a network of like-minded people that have been where you are. You know, and that's really cool for us to see, because like I said, we do the same thing, or we've tried to do the same thing with Church Safety Guys in our ministry.
You guys do a great job of it as well. I see it all the time whenever I check you guys' social media. I'm like, oh, this is so cool.
we try. Sometimes it's sometimes it gets crazy between our work schedules and everything else, because we still we both still work full time. So it's like, okay.
Yeah, for sure. And I understand that, man.
I mean, at the end of the day, though, that's why we do what we do, because we've seen best practices, we've seen stuff work, and we want to be there for the churches that need it, and the folks and the teams that need it, because there was a point in time when we were in that place and we didn't have those resources. I mean, and it wasn't that long ago, honestly.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, there's so much available out there now, you know, for churches to be successful in the safety and security realm. But we still, when we look at our focus, and at least what we try and do, we're still different. And in some cases, the only one out there that's saying, look, you know, you can use social media, you can interact with people, but you can also disciple and mentor, and not have it just be tactical, but take it that step further, like offer the training, be practical, but then also be biblical and help someone, and give them hope from a different, you know, different perspective.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
Bringing empathy into the training, bringing that humility into the training. I mean, we're all in any given training, whether we're the trainer or we're the trainee, you should always have a hunger. You should always be there craving more. And the reality is, just because you're training doesn't mean you're not learning. And I think there's oftentimes the best times I pick up something is when I'm teaching. So it's a lot of times that's the best way to kind of solidify a skill. But I really think it's empathy that is key. And you're going to somebody who's not just teaching a transactional class, mm-hmm. where you're showing up, it's very canned, it's very rote, they're repeating it, they offer it 20 times during the year, it's the exact same playbook. And, mm-hmm. you know, it just, mm-hmm. it can get pretty bland, if you will, and mm-hmm. they're just kind of stamping widgets instead of investing into people, with mm-hmm. the side effect being that you're training them. And right. I think that's the difference in that I see, and it's a rare breed in the church. It's a rare breed in training. When you get that, because it's not, I'll be honest, it's not as profitable to do that because you're spending extra time yeah. to do that. And I think that's what drives, unfortunately, a lot of the shops nowadays that are focused on it as a company, and they're very focused on profits, mm-hmm. and yet they're selling to churches. And they're not necessarily speaking the same language. They're right. just, they're using a spirit of fear to close a contract mm-hmm. instead of understanding why do you need my service? How can I help your team? What can we do differently than say somebody else? And mm-hmm. then proceeding.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I think there's also a lot of, like you said, learning a lot while you're teaching as well, because, you know, as somebody that teaches full time, you know, I'm usually on the range 7, 8, sometimes 9 hours a day, 5 days a week. I found there's a lot of little lessons to be learned in the mundane, because mm-hmm. when you teach, for the most part, like you said, you teach, obviously the curriculum changes over time and it evolves and it gets better and better and better. But at the core level, you're still teaching like firearm safety or, you know, whatever it is. And it's like, there's so much to be learned in just those little nuances or little details throughout my work week. And I know over the last couple of years, I've focused a lot on like, what can I learn not only from the lesson that I'm teaching this person about firearms, but what can I learn from this person and what can they learn from me on a more like emotional and just connective level? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Well, and part of it too is a word that we haven't, the three of us haven't brought up or mentioned, and that's authenticity mm-hmm. and being authentic, right? Mm-hmm. Because honestly, I mean, we do the same thing. Like I've been at large scale events for church community situations or churches where I've said, oh, I made a mistake. You know what? This isn't going to work. Let's change this mm-hmm. and let's do it better. Let's do it different.
Yeah.
And I've had people look at me like, what? Like you just yeah. said, you just admitted that you made a mistake. And my response is usually, yeah, I make them all the time. Like mm-hmm. when I was the safety director at my church, part of the reason I had the people around me that I did in leadership was to help me, because I knew that I wasn't always going to make the best decision. Mm-hmm. I mean, I process information, I try and do the best, but sometimes having other, obviously surrounding people where maybe you have a weakness, you know, mm-hmm. and those folks can help you is an amazing way to do it. Mm-hmm. And so that's how I've always tried to lead teams and do that, is really from a way of being authentic and just saying, look, I'm not perfect. I've made mistakes. This is a great way to do it. We've had a lot of success with it, but you know what? Every church is different. Every situation's different. Mm-hmm. And I think to an extent, I think that, I certainly see that with you guys as well, that with the Red Letter Project. I mean, I've heard you on Instagram or do a video or whatnot that you're like, hey, I used to do it this way, but I changed. I don't do it yeah. that way anymore.
Yeah.
And it's like, it brings that authenticity to it, that it's like, wait a second, this person is approachable mm-hmm. and this person isn't saying that they're an expert and that they're perfect mm-hmm. because they don't think that. They're just doing the best they can to, you know, to help people. Yeah. And that's kind of, you know, that's where we are as well. It's like, you know, being at a conference and having someone come up and be like, hey, can you sign my book for me? It's like, okay, it's not.
It takes a minute to like compute.
Yeah, I'm like, it's just me.
Every
like,
time
I put this book, this book together to help churches. I didn't expect, you know, I didn't expect someone to say or do something because of that. Yeah. So,
well, it's being humble and also like humanizing yourself, because that's what I, or at least in my mind, that's what I would like to see from an instructor that was teaching me.
Sure.
Like I remember, you know, way back in the day, going through some of the law enforcement training I did at, you know, various training facilities, it was always like I very specifically remember certain instructors from a very long time ago because of how they treated me, in the sense that they weren't afraid to show the human side of themselves and show that their whole life wasn't just training, right? Like, I think a lot of times we can get so focused on, especially if it is your full-time job or it's what you're trying to build. It's like the focus is I'm a firearms instructor and that's all my personality is. And we forget that our identity is in Christ and it's absolutely not in a firearms instructor. So it's like, how are you going to build a connection with somebody if that's all they know you as? So I think that's just
important thing to think about. that was a gold nugget and a mic drop. I might have to cut that part of the broadcast out and put it as a short on TikTok or Instagram.
It might actually go viral at that one.
Oh, there we go.
But no, that's amazingly on point. It is true. It's like who are you doing this for? Mm-hmm. And you know, the day that, and I heard this somewhere today and I forget where, I think it was actually during our sermon at church today, but the guy that was preaching commented and he said, the day that you stop asking questions about a topic is the day that you're done. Mm-hmm. There's no motivation. There's nothing else. And it was funny because I was sitting there and I was like, wow, that's kind of what, like, we always say, you know, always training, like always look for that opportunity to have those questions and answer them because that's motivating. But to your point of what you just said, you know, when we do focus our identity in Christ and, you know, in our relationship with Him, that also helps us to lead and to serve better.
Yeah.
Especially if we're in like a church safety, church security capacity, like with our congregations or our houses of worship.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think too, like I know I personally in the back of my mind always have the fear of, oh my gosh, am I going to put out incorrect information or is my information not going to be up to my own standard, or, you know, like you said, cause things change. Like I've definitely, I've changed many things about my training over the years, especially as I take more courses from even higher level instructors or even, you know, just other people in the local area, whatever it is, it's always changing. But, you know, it's like, you can get super down on yourself and be disappointed and just be, it feel like you're not doing good enough. And then again, you take that identity and you put it back into Christ and say, does Jesus really care if I got that topic on dry fire exactly right? No. Did you try your best to spread the word while you were doing it? That's the best we can ask for. So in my mind, it kind of washes that fear out, especially being on like social media and whatnot. There's a lot of, you know, there's a lot out there, and you just don't want to be, you want to be part of the solution, not part of the problem. So yeah, I think it's incredibly important to be humble when you're putting stuff out there and just understanding that things change. And as long as you're willing to admit it, it's like, doesn't make a difference in the world.
Well, and part of any person's individual success is being flexible and understanding and being willing to understand that things change, right? Mm-hmm. And being willing to say, you know what, I need to change how I'm doing things. I mean, there was a point in time, and you're welcome to laugh about this if either one of you would like to, but there was a point in time where I taught firearm classes and I would not carry a firearm with one in the chamber because I was just like, I'm not comfortable with it. I'm not training people that way. And, you know, through a process of me going to other instructors that were more qualified to take classes and learn and everything, mm-hmm. I worked through that because I got to the point where I was like, you know what, this is kind of silly. This mm-hmm. is a silly thing to do, and I'm going to change that habit. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if you're not, if even in a church, and we were talking about it a little bit before off camera, but even if you're not willing to listen to somebody else that has a suggestion and evaluate that suggestion, mm-hmm. it's still, that can be pretty frustrating and I don't know, disturbing, because yeah. if you're not willing to at least look at what you're doing to try and improve it or do something better, and being willing to evaluate that, I don't know. It's kind of like, you know, being a theologian, but only studying one theology and not being aware of everything else. It's like, yeah, okay, yeah. how can you defend what your beliefs are if you don't spend the time actually researching mm-hmm. other stuff to yeah. know the value of what you believe?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, it's just like in training, you got to push yourself beyond your boundary to understand where that boundary is mm-hmm. so that you can push it again. And so it's that same thing. You got to create those boundaries that you continually strive to push.
Mm-hmm. Yep, exactly. For sure.
So before we run out of time, because we are almost out of time, what are some of the areas that you typically train people in that you could recommend, like for church safety teams or just in general, that are good beyond, I guess, beyond just firearm stuff, mm-hmm. but what's some stuff that you typically train in, and what trends do you see as far as the training that people need?
So apart from the firearm stuff, I would definitely say, obviously you guys know this, like prioritizing basic medical needs. For instance, like CPR, just the easy stuff, like CPR is so incredibly easy to not only just teach your church team, like security team, but also the congregation. I had a student not too long ago, she came in and she was on a different type of team, but something very similar. And she actually ended up using CPR one time at I think it was like a church event. And then not even 2 weeks later, if I remember the story correctly, almost had to use it again at that same church. And it was like just an interesting thing. Like, it just reminds you how important the basic training, the basics are, that like, even if you're not on a security team, should be going through that training. On top of that, like, I think just the basics of also situational awareness and like just having a very good grasp on indicators is really important. And that's something you can teach and train not only security teams, but all the way up to like, you know, middle school, high school kids. Like, what should they be looking for when somebody walks in a door? Like, that's just something that's, you know, should spark some sort of interest on everybody in everybody's mind, I think. Trying to think too, besides the firearm stuff, of course, that's always important. You want whoever is, if you have a church security team that's carrying, you want to make sure that whoever's carrying on that team actually knows what they're doing, and they understand their limitations. They understand their boundaries, like you were saying. But they also understand like their capabilities, and they're able to work as a team. Because if you can't do that, then there definitely will be more damage done in an instant than it could have been if there was nobody even there. Right. So yeah, I'd say like the medical stuff, and then also just basic situational awareness, because so many things can be prevented by just being like kind of on alert while you're in a public space like that.
For sure. For sure. I think that, honestly, with the CPR and first aid, I think that a lot of times people forget how simple it is and mm-hmm. how easy it can be to add value and contribute mm-hmm. with that. Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of times, like I've taught at churches, and somebody will say, well, that's for the medical team. That's not really my thing, so I'm not going to. And I'm like, okay, so here's a scenario. Yeah. Let's talk about this.
Yeah.
But the truth is that, you know, that's for the team that I had at my old church. that was something we, at one point in time, we had a security team and a medical team, mm-hmm. and we just realized that it was too, it was creating too much divisiveness in the right. culture.
Yeah.
And so we kind of did away with both teams. We created one team, we trained mm-hmm. everybody the same way in everything. And it just made for a better, better culture, better line of unity. Mm-hmm. And what was interesting was that we had a similar situation where we trained our team, and one of the individuals that actually had an issue was like, no, I'm not going to learn CPR. I'm not doing that medical stuff. He came, he sat through it, and then he ended up using it like a month later to help yeah. his own family.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
thankfully he was able to step in and do that. And mm-hmm. then he came back to me and he's like, hey, thanks for making us do that class. I really appreciate it. Mm-hmm. But stuff like that, I mean, that's honestly, yeah. that's simple.
It's not glamorous, but it's important.
yeah. And it's not really complicated either. I mean, that's stuff that, you know, a lot of schools are teaching in high school now, and
right, yeah.
you know, it's just a good thing. I had actually, I think, I think it was in Cincinnati, but I actually had a Boy Scout group contact me, and they said, "Hey, we can't find a CPR instructor. Could you come down and teach our Scout troop how to do CPR and first aid?" And those kids, I'll tell you, they were asking questions that were better, like mm-hmm. more intelligent questions yeah. and better suited questions than some adults. But they were like,
yeah,
we want to learn. And they were just ambitious to mm-hmm. to learn and understand new things and how to do things. And, you know, folks that can get past that and realize that it is a simple thing and it's extremely mm-hmm. helpful.
Yeah.
You know, that's a big benefit.
It's actually pretty wild. Like the difference between teaching like younger, let's just say like middle school to high school to college age people, as opposed to adults. First of all, they're used to learning. They've been in school up until like, basically they've been in school consistently since they were of age. And they're still in school. So their brain's very much used to intaking information and applying it. And they're also humble. They're willing to learn because they understand that you're the authority figure in that subject. So they're willing to listen to everything you say. And it's also really interesting because of how involved they are. Like I know a lot of times we do campus safety classes a lot for like colleges, high schools and whatnot, basically teaching kids everything from like how to take an Uber safely if they're ever in that position, how to avoid mm-hmm. getting your drink spiked at a party, everything from like how to actually go inspect an Airbnb before you lay down in bed at night. And, you know, just the things that, you know, they're going to experience in college at some point. And those, that age group takes it in and they absorb it all. And I will get calls at 2 a.m. sometimes, some of them saying, oh my gosh, guess what? The training I just used, like, I, you know, whatever it is.
That's and awesome.
It's, like, it's crazy how much they retain. Sometimes you might not think they are because they're just looking at you, but like, it is so cool to involve that age group because they'll take such initiative and they'll take ownership of it as well. So like, I'm a huge proponent of in your church, your school, whatever it is, like, don't hide the topic from them. Give it all to them and show them how to properly respond, because there's also been studies that have been put out there talking about like the psychology behind a traumatic event. And they always note that bystanders that don't do anything are actually more traumatized by the end of the event than the people that are actually like working to help. So it's like, yeah, I don't sure. understand why there's such a like a hesitation behind involving the younger generation, because they can be so helpful and they also enjoy doing it. Like, it's very clear when you're teaching them.
It's interesting. We've had, you mentioned that age group. We've had a few churches reach out to us and ask us about starting a safety team or having younger, like high schoolers come and help in the safety team. And that's something that I did at my church, where I would work with the teens and the parents and mm-hmm. sit down with them and kind of have a conversation and then, you know, bring them in. Several of the individuals that do that have gone on to have very successful public safety careers yep. because of that, spending that time and giving mm-hmm. them kind of that flavor of instruction and understanding.
Yeah.
And, you know, it doesn't, if for the churches that are like, oh, I'd never do that, that are listening, it's not complicated. It's yeah. not. And sometimes those younger ages can carry things out and mm-hmm. do things better than the adults can because yeah. they're following and they understand mm-hmm. the value of doing what's instructed better.
Yeah, no, 100%. It is so easy to teach that generation. And it's also really fun. Like, and we talked about community earlier. Like, I've seen a group of like ninth graders, like teach them how to use a tourniquet and just go completely crazy with it in an active, like an actual situation, like a replicated situation and training. Mm-hmm. And it's so cool to watch. So it's like, I don't think there's a problem at all with involving that generation. I think it's actually more beneficial than anything. Especially cause what you mentioned before too, about, you know, I went in the Coast Guard when I was 18 years old, just like everybody else that goes to the military. Right. But I needed that structure. And I remember having that, just that little bit of responsibility completely changed me as a person. So it's like, if you can give, you know, just a simple task to like on the safety team, like, hey, stand at this door and just be situationally aware, like take notes of anything that looks weird. Like a task as simple as that could completely alter that person's like perspective on what they want to do as for a career, or could completely change their view on how they view the church. Like, this church wants to keep me safe and it's a protected, safe space. You could go on and on, but like, particularly you think about how the retention right now and the need for new hires in law enforcement and the military, right? There's a reason why people mm-hmm. aren't going yeah. into those careers. And I think part of it is, well, of course, besides just, you know, there is a corruption issue a lot of times. And then the second thing is there's no interest anymore in the younger, like the high school age. Like, they don't bring in people to speak about it. They kind of make it a taboo topic nowadays. So there's really no interest there anymore. So I think the church, like having a church safety team and involving that age group would be very beneficial and on multiple levels.
Absolutely.
For sure.
Yeah, it's a great call. I see it in our own police department. I mean, we're down 10% mm-hmm. of overall headcount of what mm-hmm. we could be staffed for. And I mean, I'm a volunteer in my local police department, and we see it. We hear from the chief all the time. It's a continual talking point as to where we're at. And we're to the point where we celebrate an officer who transfers. Because they're coming over instead of having to go through the academy. So,
right. Yeah.
It's tough. I mean, it's the same way in church. You can have a season where it's tough to recruit and you're not finding anybody.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
You want to be, but you question whether you should still be so selective and whether mm-hmm. you cross the threshold to start advertising, if you will, within ministries. But I still argue that, hey, yes, you may be hurting for a little bit. And unless you're at the verge of burning out your core team, I would never go to the point of advertising. Always keep it in a more selective type setup.
Well, and like you said, I think James, you said this like at the very beginning of the podcast, like basically creating your own change, right? Like if you introduce the need, like the possible opportunity there in a career like law enforcement or the military, that the person might not have otherwise been exposed to. At that point, they can take the steps needed to pursue that opportunity. But if it's never presented to them at that age, how are they going to know? Because we, if anything, like especially nowadays, we need good, strong leaders
absolutely
to go in those career fields and incite change and incite like these values that hopefully they've grown up with. So it's so important, I think, to start focusing a little bit more on that generation.
For sure. I honestly, that's exactly where I was. You know, I got involved in public safety because something happened to me when I was 13 or 14. So mm-hmm. that's having that someone take an interest in me, with that, it made a difference. So, mm-hmm. and pushed me into, you know, doing public safety most of my life in one capacity or another, because, you know, someone spent time and focused on that with me. So, but anyhow, we are just about out of time. So Mike, did you have anything you want to add or wrap up?
No, it's great. Great to have you on the show again. We're thrilled that you'll be joining us down here in Texas in a couple months. Be good to meet you in person. Just thrilled by what you do and the way you do it, I think is the most important. The Christ element to it is really what aligns with our mission and why we have you on a second time. But thanks so much.
I appreciate it. Thank you guys so much for having me. I always love coming on here, and I love what you guys are doing as well. You're really making a difference out there.
Thanks. All right, so we'll wrap up real quick. But again, thanks for hanging out with us. Thanks for listening. And for more information on the Church Security Essentials Conference, you can visit our website at churchsafetyconference.com, or you can visit our main website, ministry website, at churchsafetyguys.com. And anytime that we can help you all, please feel free to reach out to us. We'd love to do that the best we can. And we'll say goodnight. So until next time, have a great week. Take care. God bless.
Thank you for joining the Church Safety Guys broadcast, brought to you by Vigilant Impact. We hope that you found it informative, and we appreciate your feedback and interaction. Be sure to share our broadcast with your teams, join the discussion online, and connect with us on social media or at our website at churchsafetyguys.com. For other great ministry resources, download the Church Security app. Remember, keep a servant's heart, a mindset of ministry, and semper disciplina. Always be training. Have a blessed week.